I was 25 and realized that you couldn't just wake up every day and automatically feel happy. Happiness wasn't just a given. And I think that mindset almost led Bumble to finding me and me to find Bumble. I was presented with this amazing opportunity. I knew this would never, ever happen to me again. So run with it. Like, better to try and fail than not try at all. I think anxiety, stress is something that's always been a big part of my life. But I guess I hope if anyone else experiences that, I'm proof that
you can still have a great life.
And a high pressure job and just work out ways to manage that.
Welcome to the Seize the Yay podcast. Busy and happy are not the same thing. We too rarely question what makes the heart sing. We work, then we rest, but rarely we play, and often don't realize there's more than one way. So this is a platform to hear and explore the stories of those who found lives they adore. The good, bad and ugly, the best and worst day, will bear all the facets of seizing your yay. I'm Sarah Holloway, or Spoonful of Sarah, a lawyer turned funtrepreneur who swapped the suits and heels to co-found Matcha Maiden and Matcha Milk Bar. Seize the Yay is a series of conversations on finding a life you love and exploring the self-doubt, challenge, joy and fulfillment along the way. Hello, beautiful people. As I mentioned in the very first episode of Seize the Yay, while leaving corporate to start a business has been my personal way to yay, I'm very conscious that this definitely isn't the case for everyone. So some people find dream jobs in amazing companies, others find their yay outside of their work altogether. So from the outset, I've been curating our list of amazing guests to cover all kinds of yay, and I'm always aware not to just push one single pathway to joy and fulfillment. But recently, a lovely follower was kind enough to give some feedback and mention just that so far things have been a little bit skewed in favor of business people, which is absolutely true. So I just wanted to reiterate that that hasn't been by design. We have some wonderful stories of people finding dream jobs and staying in those roles, but timing so far has just worked out that we haven't been able to record all of those yet, perhaps because business ownership by its nature lends itself to a bit more flexible scheduling. So to kick us off, the first intrapreneur of the year literally landed her dream job 2 years ago and hasn't looked back. Michelle Battersby is an amazing example of how you can leave the corporate world, but not necessarily to start your own business. Although technically, as you'll hear, she did have to start a business from scratch. Michelle started out as a competitive rower with her heart set on the Olympics, but ended up studying arts and then a master's in HR once she realized how much she was sacrificing for her rigorous training. She entered the workforce with Citibank and spent several years climbing the corporate ladder in banking, getting a job later at UBS, returning to Citibank, and then even ending up at PwC. But it's her latest role as country lead and marketing director of Bumble Australia that has changed her life completely when the opportunity landed in her lap just over 2 years ago. With no former experience, but an intuitive belief in her gut that this was her opportunity of a lifetime, she quit her job that day and has been building Bumble Australia into the wonderful community it is today. It's not just a dating app, there's also Bumble BFF and Bumble Biz, all based on the premise that the woman makes the first move, which is groundbreaking in the industry. She's an absolute hoot, and I'm so happy to have her here on the show to show you all that dream jobs really do exist. Hello, beautiful Michelle.
Hello, I'm so excited about this.
Thank you so much for joining me. Michelle was just saying before that she's done lots and lots of interviews, but mostly about Bumble and not about herself. So I'm so excited to be one of the first.
Yeah, brace yourself. You might change your mind.
So I love to start with asking everyone what the most down-to-earth thing is about them. And I think, you know, in the social media world and our online digital personas, they can seem so intimidating and different from a distance to who we actually are. So to break the ice, what's something super normal about you?
I'm so normal. Probably the most normal thing about me is, I would have to say, it's my relationship with my sisters. I'm really, really close with both my younger sisters. One of our favourite things to do is to all get in the car together, do music manies, where we just basically drive around listening to R&B, dancing and singing like idiots, and then go through drive-thru McDonald's.
Oh my God, that's the best.
Yeah, it's one way to switch your mind off.
Oh, totally. What good sister bonding.
Yeah.
Love it. What do you get from Macca's? What's your, like,
same typical thing every time.
Yeah.
Double cheeseburger, 10-pack of nuggets with barbecue sauce.
Oh, nuggets.
I actually don't care for the chips.
Really? Really? Wow, yeah. Controversial.
Yeah, just the burger and the nuggets.
Oh, see, I'm a sweet and sour sauce girl, though.
Yeah, barbecue, it throws a spanner in the works.
Yeah, it does. I'm like, ooh, yeah. I don't know about that one.
Whole family's on barbecue.
What? Okay, yeah. It's a family thing. That's okay then. All right, so the first segment is called Way to Yay, which is pretty much just explaining how you got to where you are today. But I'd like to start all the way back at the beginning. So I want to talk about young Michelle. So were you cool at school? Did you have an awkward teenage phase? I mean, you're so together now. You're stunningly beautiful. But you grew up on the northern beaches in Manly.
Yeah, grew up in Manly. I was always really into sport. Mm-hmm. I think that I was born into... I was almost born to be competitive, I think. It was something that I loved from as young as I can remember. Mm-hmm. I genuinely grew up believing I would be an Olympian. So
that's so cool.
Yeah, I think... So my parents were both pretty good athletes. Mm-hmm. And I think when you grow up seeing that, it seems so attainable. Like if you've got an Olympic medal in your house, that's not weird to you. That's just like, oh, I can go do that as well.
Were they Olympians?
Yeah. So my dad's got an Olympic medal.
Oh my gosh.
And my mum has, they've both got like a few world championship medals. Interestingly, actually, so my mum and dad were both rowers. That's how they met. And my mum was a lightweight rower, and women, like female lightweight rowers, didn't go to the Olympics when she rowed. So
really?
Yeah, only males. So she went to the World Championships, probably would have gone to the Olympics, but she'll like me throwing that in.
Yeah.
There you go.
So that's, you know, why you've come out with girl power kind of right through your blood. Wow. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. That's so cool though.
Yeah. So I was really just really into sport, and that's all I focused on at school as well. I moved schools when I was in year 11 for rowing, actually, to go to a school that was really good at rowing.
Pymble Ladies College.
Yeah. So at the time, that was kind of the school you wanted to beat. So I didn't beat them. I just joined them. Yeah, and that was my key focus. I don't think there was any sport you could do at school that I didn't do. I wouldn't have even got into uni if it wasn't for sport. I got extra marks for kind of sporting achievements, and I wouldn't have got into the degree I wanted to do if I hadn't have got those.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, so academics fell to the side for me. But yeah, just competitive, sporty. Spent a lot of time with my family, and yeah, grew up by the beach. So I think pretty normal childhood.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah.
And did you think that you would end up as a career sports person?
I did. I actually thought I would be, I literally believed I'd be an Olympian. That was all I thought about. I used to train like 12 times a week. I got a scholarship for rowing to Sydney Uni. So I rowed at uni. I ended up being quite a weird weight though to be ultimately really competitive. So I was put in a lighter weight category. I had to hold my weight on 59 kilos and I'm nearly 6 foot. So that was challenging.
Yeah.
And that sucked a lot of the enjoyment out of it. So that's why I ultimately ended up giving it up. But I actually had to see a counselor when I stopped because I saw it as such a big failure and I'd genuinely believed it so much. So it was like relearning what my purpose was and not having such a controlled lifestyle where you've got coaches kind of dictating what you do every day or someone asking you what your weight is. So it was a transformative period, I think. I would have been about 21, so still pretty young. But yeah, then I finished uni, stepped into the real world, the corporate world, and I quickly did move on from that. And like to hope I've got a bit of muscle memory left just carrying me along.
It's so funny that you say that because I had my fiance Nick on a couple of weeks ago and he was an elite athlete as well and reached that same stage where injury just stopped him going any further, and he was born in, you know, an off year for the Olympics, which is only every 4 years. If you peak at the wrong time, you know, it's really unfortunate. But that reframing of your mind to learn that you have another purpose and to learn how to do life without that being your singular focus and having everyone around you focus on that, it's really tough to adjust and understand who you are outside of that.
Yeah, it's always been interesting for me when I quit. My parents had never pressured me or anything because they'd, you know, done what they needed to achieve. But it was once I quit that my dad was like, oh, it actually took me 5 years longer than it was meant to finish my degree. And these are all the things that I sacrificed. And this is kind of how hard that really is. And I think because I'd seen it as being so attainable, I'd never really realized how much I was going to have to sacrifice for it.
Mm. And so at uni, you did arts and then a master's in HR and industrial relations.
Yeah.
And did you think that that was going to be, I mean, you did end up in HR, but how did you re-find your focus?
So I did a Bachelor of Arts and at the end of it was like, what the F do I do with this?
Yeah, I've got, it's pretty broad.
I've got to do something else. And my majors were just a fluke. Like, I think I'd just randomly done all the right subjects. I wasn't really focused at uni. And it was actually my dad who suggested HR. He thought, you know, I was good with people and HR is dealing with a lot of people problems. So I did a master's in HR and industrial relations and I actually loved it. That was the first time that I'd honestly really applied myself academically. I felt like a master's degree teaches you a different way of thinking. You're not just taking someone else's theory and regurgitating it. You're reading and researching and drawing your own conclusions. Mm. And I loved that way of thinking. So when I did get my first job, I got an internship at Citi. I did feel like I had found something that I loved because I liked those kind of challenges. I liked dealing with people. And I got to work in an investment bank with all these really smart people and I was never going to be a banker. So it was a good way to get into kind of a high performing kind of industry.
And then you spent 5 years in corporate banking, is that right? So you were at Citi and then at UBS.
Yeah.
And then you got a job at a third bank?
I went back to Citi actually.
Oh.
Yeah. Went back to Citi for another job and then I decided maybe banking wasn't for me. So I'd spent about 4 years in banking, three or four, and realized I don't think I'm really passionate about this. So the wheels were kind of starting to turn in my head about what I was going to do for the rest of my life. Yeah. I was sitting at my desk thinking, I don't think I can do this for 30, 40, 50 years. Yeah. Who knows?
Yeah.
So I decided to step out of that industry. Huge change, PwC, not a big change at all.
Yeah. Probably at the time it seemed radical.
Yeah, but it didn't really help. I think that that year for me was like a pivotal time in my life and I often look back on it and it taught me that you can completely change your direction. Mm. Like Bumble came a little later on, but I had started to change a lot of things in my life. I was still living at home. I'll admit that. There's a down-to-earth thing. Or just slow or lazy. I was still living...
Financially savvy. Yeah. Right? Financially savvy.
Yeah. That's a better way. So like I moved out of home. I got out of a 7-year relationship. I changed industries and just completely changed my outlook on life. And I was 25 and realized that you couldn't just wake up every day and automatically feel happy. Happiness wasn't just a given. You're an adult. You've got issues. There's a big bad world out there. Like, what are you going to make of it? And I just started to look at everything in a completely different light and trying to explore what was going to work for me. And I think that mindset almost led Bumble to finding me and me to find Bumble.
Yeah, I definitely think I love everything that you said so much. That's so the essence of what this whole podcast is about, is that yay is something that is a process. It doesn't, no one wakes up one day in their life and is like, oh, yeah, I'm living my dream life. It's something you cultivate. It's an everyday effort. And it starts, you know, maybe years before the actual dream life hits you.
Yeah.
It's something you start agitating for and it starts with a tiny feeling.
Exactly.
And it's that moment where you wake up and you go, I want to be on purpose. I don't just want to be on autopilot every day, which is fine. I mean, like, you don't have to be unhappy to make change. You can just be kind of coasting, but
yeah. And that was me. Like, I would say I was coasting. Like, I was just comfortable, but I had this gut feeling. I've said this before, but it's just so true. I was sitting at my desk thinking, there has got to be something else out there that I am better at than this.
Yeah.
Like, I am capable of more. This isn't it. I just know I'm better at something than what I'm doing right now. Mm. But I didn't know what that something was. Yeah. Like, I started exploring some very random pathways. Like, I'd come up with a really lazy exercise program. So I was looking into how to become lazy a PT. Yeah. So I could just teach people how to do the bare minimum to kind of see results.
That could go somewhere
I honestly think it could. So I'm going to keep that program on lockdown.
Yep, good. This could be under embargo.
Yeah, if I ever need a fallback.
Yeah. I definitely think, you know, I look back on my time in corporate and don't think it was a waste at all, because I did spend most of that time just trying to figure out what I wanted. And you don't know that. You're so young. It does take a little bit of time for that feeling, that gut feeling to settle in. And you don't know what you don't like until you do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that corporate experience as well, and I'm sure you can relate to this, I found it very useful being in a huge company, a huge global company, and seeing how that operates, especially in a back office role. The kind of things that I was exposed to working in HR, it definitely taught me a lot. And I was kind of grateful to be in that environment that's so structured and highly regulated. Mm. And then it was just like a slap in the face, but a really brilliant slap in the face to move to Bumble.
Yeah, so that's such a dramatic change.
Yeah.
I do agree. I'm such a big believer in the fact that you can't get what you don't ask for. So if you start looking and putting things out to the universe, it's funny how they find you.
Agreed. I genuinely believe that's how this happened.
Yeah, but how did it happen? Tell us. Tell us the story.
So I started putting these wheels in motion, looking into the fitness industry. Told a couple of people I was going to become a blogger. I don't know what I was going to blog about. I just started talking to people, really. And I was talking to a friend of mine, Ray, and I do think her belief in me and her pushing me towards this initial conversation with Whitney is what led me to take it. So I had told a friend, Ray, that I wasn't liking my job, and a couple of months later she texts me and said, you know, you're still not enjoying it. I know someone and I really think you should talk to her. She started a dating app at the time in the US. I think it's going to be amazing. If I could do it, I would. I think you should talk to her. I'd only just really moved to PwC. Like, I'd spent about 7 months there. Mm-hmm. So I honestly was quite hesitant at first. I had never heard of Bumble. But I did a bit of Googling and Whitney was really persistent. She followed me on Facebook, sent me a few emails, and I was like, okay, I'll get on the phone. So I hid in a meeting room and I spoke to her on the phone for about an hour, and I just felt like we had this connection, and it sounds so fantasy and mystical, but I just had my gut was screaming at me, this is huge. This is going to change your life. This is going to change many people's lives. This is going to work. I believed in everything that she was saying. I believed in the messaging. I believed in her goal. I could relate to what she was talking about. You know, I'd worked in a huge corporate environment. I'd worked in a female-dominated department. Like, HR is heavily female-dominated, but within a male-dominated industry, that created a weird a culture that I didn't really like. So I loved the idea of Bumble and empowering women, and women not being threatened by one another and supporting one another, creating a safe platform for women to go after what they want. I could 100% relate to that. So I hid in a meeting room, called my dad afterwards, and he was just like, quit your job. So I quit my job that day.
Really? Straight after the conversation?
Yeah, I quit my job that day. I was just like, I just believed in it so much. I didn't think I needed to think about it anymore. I just wanted her to know I was in, so stop your search, because I'm going to do it.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And so she started as one of the co-founders of Tinder, is that right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then went out on her own to do Bumble.
Yeah.
And for anyone who hasn't heard of Bumble, can you tell us just quickly, just for background?
Yeah, so Bumble is a social networking platform. We've got a date mode, a friend finding mode, and a business networking mode. Mm-hmm. And we are ultimately trying to end misogyny. We're reverse engineering traditional gender norms. And on Bumble, women make the first move. So the power is in your hands. If you match with a man, you have to initiate the conversation, and you're in control and can really take Bumble and use it for what you need.
That's such a cool point of difference. I think a lot of people there is a bit of stigma around dating apps, and I love that it distinguishes itself like with such a a game-changing, industry-changing thing as having women being the only one who could make the first move. I think that changes the whole mentality that anyone would have using it, knowing that women are in control.
Yeah, and I think from the from that first day and that first conversation, I also just felt like it was always so much more than that. You know, we've got this amazing product, and I have always felt, you know, if we can have one woman use Bumble and make the first move for the first time, you know, maybe that will lead to her making the first move in her day-to-day job, you know. Maybe she'll ask for the pay rise, maybe she'll ask for the promotion, just to back yourself. And I felt like it has always been much more of a movement. And I think that, you know, 2 years on from my joining and kind of 4 years on from Bumble initially launching, I feel like I can see those changes in society. There's still a long way to go, but things like the Me Too movement and women really coming out publicly and high profile women to support one another. We love seeing that kind of thing at Bumble. And that's exactly what we have been, you know, trying to push and pushing. For the past, 2-4 years.
Yeah, amazing. And you've said that part of getting that opportunity was kind of right place, right time, and knowing the right people. But even then, it's still not a given. Knowing people these days isn't enough to get you by anymore. So what do you think does make you stand out, or did make, you know, Whitney see you as such a good candidate to bring a whole brand? I mean, if just in case anyone hasn't realised, Michelle is the person who brought Bumble to Australia. Like, there was no Bumble Australia. You weren't heading up something that was existing. You know, you're the country lead who has brought this business into a new market from scratch and built it to what it is now.
Yeah, that was scary.
So scary.
It honestly was scary. So I started a company to essentially launch Bumble here, and that's how it grew its legs initially, and really proved that Australia was a market, you know, we could invest a lot of money in, and that we were going to see great return here. And I feel so fortunate that I had the support of Whitney and Bumble to do that, because I learned so much in that first year, even just little tax things and oh my God. But my experience in HR did, I think, definitely help with that. I honestly freaked out a little while after whilst I was kind of getting everything in
processing
place.
Processing what had happened.
Yeah, because like you said, you know, Bumble was established in the US, but it wasn't established in Australia. So I felt a lot of self-induced pressure because I had quit my job, started a company, and promised Whitney that I was going to launch this brand in Australia and that it was going to work. And then I'd also quit a really stable job, started a business. So I also had the pressure on myself to have it succeed. But I think I've always been an all-in kind of person. I've always thrown myself into the deep end. I guess with sport and everything, I've felt like I'm always used to being in high pressure situations, but I put myself in a position where there was no option to fail. So I was going to do absolutely everything I could to make sure it succeeded.
Yeah.
But I do think just local knowledge of Australia, and I felt very confident in my approach, like who I was going to pick as ambassadors, what brands we were going to partner with, what venues, like very grassroots stuff, but it all works, and it helps to position the brand in the way that it really needed to be seen in Australia, and the challenge there was to break down the stigma of online dating. So really to normalize the use of Bumble, that was what I was trying to target initially. It's weird to think back that it worked because I think about myself 2 years ago and, you know, that saying knowledge is power.
Yeah.
I've always thought, is it though?
I feel like naivety is power.
Naivety is absolutely power. Yeah. Like the things I would ask and the deals I would try and cut and the discounts I would go for, and just that hustling kind of attitude and that can do and always finding a way, that is what did it, I think, in those early days. And I think I was really fortunate to be, you know, one of kind of the first people that they brought on board, because I had a great connection with Whitney and Alex and Caroline and Sam, you know, the first four people who started at Bumble. So I could really hear their story, what they'd done, take all of their knowledge and apply it to an Australian audience.
I think you're such a great example as well of the fact that you can build amazing opportunities for yourself without having a full background in marketing to show them that you'd done it before, or without, you know, without inside inside connections. You just connected with them, or you connected with Whitney on a personal level, and that was enough for her.
Yeah.
And I think people get really bogged down in like, I need to tick off these things before I'm even eligible. But it's sort of like, if you position yourself right and you get the right opportunity and you go for it, it doesn't matter. You'd never done any of this before. You couldn't show her, I've done it for this brand, and still you've been able to do exactly that. I mean, you've so strategically picked representatives of Bumble in Australia that, you know, are in relationships and have been able to push that message of it's a really, really cool brand to be associated for all kinds of social networking.
Exactly.
Because everyone was hesitant at the start. You know, people are like, oh, what's this Bumble thing that's doing all these cool things? Yeah. I'm in a relationship. That doesn't include me. And even, then you turned it around.
Yeah, even hiring people. I mean, you know, one of the first things that I had to do was find a team. And the first five people that I asked said no. So that also showed kind of the awareness of Bumble in Australia at that time, but also just how far I think this brand has come. But also just for anyone out there who's like looking to make a change or has a gut feeling something's not right for them, I think also just to be open to opportunities and to take them when they present themselves. But nah, I'm glad you think that we've picked great ambassadors in Australia, because I think we have.
Yeah, and really changed what people's initial reaction would be if they just heard, oh, it's some dating app. You know, anyone who's not single would be like, that's not for me. Whereas it is, because there's Bumble Business that's been launched, there's Bumble BFF, like there's so many other ways you can use it and be associated with it that has been really strategically done, and maybe because you haven't done it the way that all marketing people would do it. I love that.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't even know what a marketing strategy, like I don't know any theoretical marketing terms. I'm sure what I'm doing somehow fits into a marketing textbook, but I couldn't tell you under what category.
That's the best part, though. I think that's why you're so interesting, because you have done such an incredible job. I mean, when I first heard your title, like country lead, I was trying to, you know, put that in a box in my head of like, what does that actually mean? And even though technically that's not a founder, you kind of are. You've had to do everything that a business owner has to do when they start. You had to build the team. You had to build the message. You had to find the people to come and do the things and then get in the media. Like, you've had to do everything I had to do at the start.
I think, honestly, that's one of the things that I admire most about Whitney and about Bumble, and also a lot of the other senior leaders in Bumble now, is we've all really been empowered and supported, and they really want us all to feel like we are mini CEOs, and I hope everyone in my team feels like that. You know, there's complete creative freedom, and we can come up with an idea and execute it, and coming from a huge company to that and not having to go through all these lines of approvals and just actually go out there and do something, I think is just so unique and something that I definitely don't take for granted. But even just Whitney's trust in me is such an amazing lesson in how to scale a business, and something that I try to remind myself of daily. You know, when we're looking for new people, hiring new people, when we're working with ambassadors, like, you're not going to be able to reach more people and be able to scale if you can't trust people and if you can't identify which areas, even in Australia, you know, I don't know where's cool to go out in Adelaide and things like that. So I'm going to make sure I find someone who does know that.
Yeah.
Just simple things like that. But they help enormously.
I think it's so cool that there are businesses out there that if there's not even if you don't have the idea, but if you don't have the opportunity to start your own thing, you can be an intrapreneur. You can be an internal CEO.
Absolutely.
Those opportunities are everywhere.
That's something, even now with my mind, I feel like my mindset's changed so much over the past few years. And when I was in banking, I used to think, I honestly found it hard to kind of find someone who I could model my career off, you know? You kind of look for these role models, or you put someone on a pedestal and think, I want to be like that. And I couldn't find that. But if I was to be back in that industry now with my current mindset, I would just be saying, you be the role model.
Yeah.
Like, you be the first one to go out and do it.
Yeah.
You pave the way for someone else. So,
I think everyone has their chance to build their own personal brand or business within whatever structure they're working in. It's just that most people don't realize that ability. So I'm such a big supporter of, like, whatever it is that you're doing, it doesn't have to be starting your own business, but you can be innovative and create change from wherever you are.
Absolutely.
You just underestimate the ability to do that.
Absolutely.
And often leaders will be really receptive to that. It's just that you've never tested them before.
They love that. And I think it's even, you know, with your career, like, take it into your own hands, drive your own performance your performance reviews, drive your career development conversations with your manager. Managers respect that. I love seeing that. If someone in my team comes to me and is like, I think I can do X, Y, and Z, and I want my job to be this, regardless of what the decision is, I would be so supportive of that, and just have that courage and back yourself like that.
So in terms of being the country lead, I mean, obviously at the beginning there was a lot of business building out the infrastructure and the team. Now, day to day, what is your actual role? And how did you learn all those skills as well, hiring and all that stuff? I mean, obviously HR helps you, but all the stuff that isn't related to HR, how did you learn those things along the way?
Trial and error. gut, intuition, honestly. I think with Bumble, I felt like I was the demographic, I was the consumer, and I really understood the brand. So I applied a lot to myself. I had never been on a dating app. I'd never used a dating app before, and I never wanted to use a dating app. So my initial question was, okay, how do I get myself to want to be on this, and how do I position this as a brand that I think is really cool and that me and all my friends would want to be on? It was a lot of looking at, you know, what are the current brands in Australia that are really well respected at the moment? What are the brands that are being creative that we could partner with? Who is in the media and speaking out on female empowerment? Who's making a difference in their community and really tapping into those kinds of communities? I mean, I think that that backing myself honestly helped so much of it. And I did have, you know, those core relationships in the US that I could really always rely on, which helped so much, and pull from what they'd done. But yeah, there was a lot of trusting yourself. And I don't know, am I lucky it worked? I'm not sure.
You must be good at pitches.
I think the best thing from my past experience was I went into banking at around 20-21, and then I got a job that I didn't think I would get until I was quite a bit older. So I was young and I was looking after my own department. So I was going into meetings with the head of the trading floor and telling them why they could or couldn't do something. So I always had to have a lot of confidence, and really a lot of it is that fake it till you make it. I would never show someone how scared or unsure I was, because who's going to believe you or trust you if you sound like you're not sure?
Yes, totally.
I think that helped in the early days, because I was never intimidated walking into meetings. I felt like I could hold my own. I was so confident in the direction that Bumble needed to go in Australia. And yeah, I felt like I got it. So
every business needs a you.
Oh, thanks. Spend a day with me and that might change.
So, I mean, you guys have done some incredible things. You're also head of marketing, and that's been just such an amazing story of how Bumble has shot to the forefront of everyone's minds. And there's been some super, super glamorous, fancy things like the Melbourne Cup, the Portsea Polo. But then I can also imagine, like any business, there are so many unglamorous things along the way. So what are some of both of those, some of the most glamorous and exciting things you've done, and some of the least glamorous things that have happened behind the scenes?
I mean, I drag boxes full of merchandise down the hallways of our co-working space weekly. Like, I'm surprised we haven't been evicted. I think starting from the beginning, you could never kind of walk into that role and just expect that you're going to be doing press and not having to bump in and out of events. So I've done all of the event packing, like all of the posting. I've done all the gift bags. So much of that bumping in, bumping out, that's not really glamorous, but it needs to happen. And then, Melbourne Cup is glamorous on a brand level, but on a personal level, I'd never be invited to that if Bumble wasn't a part of it. So I was honestly in shock. That was surreal to actually nail that within the first couple of years. And I was so happy with how we executed that, and all of the people that came. I honestly couldn't have hoped for more, really. I can't describe that experience. I think I'm still in shock. Yeah. That's glam, but there's also very, like, you wake up at 4 a.m. every day, lots of media, really on your game. I always want to make sure that I'm always talking to everyone who we've invited and things like that. So it looks very glamorous and it's so fun and I'm so grateful for that, but it's hard work as well.
Like drilling holes in the floor?
Yeah. 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 So there are a couple of moments on Melbourne Cup Day, as I'm sure everyone is aware, it was torrential rain. And we had these amazing, huge hexagonal windows. And the rain just kept coming in to the point where our floor was starting to sink and everyone was about to arrive. So we had construction workers drilling holes to drain the water out and then just putting the couch back on top of them. But I mean, we were lucky because other marquees lost their electricity. I heard that might not be correct, but yeah,
it's a good story.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, to execute those kind of things, you would have to have quite a significant budget. So is financial budgeting and management a big part of your role, or do you now have a team who does that?
I manage our budgets. Yep. So that's my responsibility. But I also can hustle.
Yes.
So, I mean, I think that what we did at Melbourne Cup was amazing. And that was our first year. And, you know, we really wanted to see how creative we could be, test the waters, see what kind of a response we could get. So I was really happy with that. But, I mean, we do things from Melbourne Cup to, I put stickers on Domino's pizza boxes and dropped them at universities. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
you can spend $500 and do something amazing. We've done things for literally the tiniest budget and we've seen uplift in our registration. So, yeah. Melbourne Cup was all about national reach.
Yeah. But you can have a big impact without that.
Yeah.
I think that's so important because you do think sometimes that there are like XYZ steps that you need to do to build a big business. And it's so easy to overlook the really lateral thinking options that are just like not requiring $1 million budget.
Yeah.
You can have a big impact.
Even with ambassadors and things like that, like build genuine, authentic relationships and educate people on why your brand is so amazing, and then you end up with actual advocates for your brand and you might not really be paying, you know, these people like everyone thinks.
Yeah, because when you are fun to be around, people want to be around you. Like that's the benefit.
And when you're a brand as amazing as Bumble, people want to be associated with it.
They want to be in the beehive.
Exactly.
All right, so the next segment is called Nay-T-Yay, which is a little bit more of the nitty-gritty behind, you know, the success stories, and it's the stuff that doesn't necessarily make it to social media, even in our most real moments. Often in the really, really tough times, you don't feel like posting.
Yeah. This is a big category for me, I think.
Yeah. So what are some of the things along the way that have said nay to your yay?
So I have always suffered with really bad anxiety to the point where I actually don't know how it feels to not be anxious because I've had it my whole life. My hair, actually, I lost my hair when I was 6. From anxiety. Yeah. So I actually have patches on my scalp where the pigment on my scalp changed and my hair grows white from alopecia. Yeah. So I mean, even with sport as well, I've felt anxiety and stress. I've given myself viral rashes on my whole body, scalp rashes, viral meningitis, pharyngitis, like all of these physical reactions to stress and anxiety. I think that's why I actually have liked high-pressure situations because it's almost like a test for me and I feel like it's a way of channeling all this energy I have. Like I've always been quite an energetic person, always in a rush, went to school early, don't stop talking. I'm just a disruptive person in class. And I think anxiety probably played a part in all of that.
I'm the same. I think it's the craziest of us do the greatest things, but also are the craziest while we do it.
Yeah.
And struggle with that whole endless overthinking. It's very A-type thing to just be in your head all the time.
I am so in my head.
Yeah, me too.
And I guess, you know, with you as well running a business, you don't want other people around you to see that. I think it's really great to show vulnerability. And I definitely show vulnerability on a personal level, but not so much on a public or business level. Because I think you've got to find ways to manage that. Like, that is not the right time to show vulnerability.
Yeah. It's so interesting that you said that, because there is such a big move to, it's trendy to be real and, you know, like be authentic and all those kind of buzzwords are a big thing, which is so great to see the move towards it. But then that kind of overshadows the fact that sometimes those moments aren't meant to be seen, and there are times, like in a boardroom, where you don't want everyone to know that you're
having crying.
Private panic attack within my body is not coming out right now. Like, exactly. You need to keep it together in those moments. So there is a time and a place.
Yeah. And I think that's why, you know, being authentic and taking care of yourself is so important. But I think it's also recognizing those moments within yourself and knowing when to. Maybe that's when you need to take some time off or you need to switch off for a while. Mm. I think I'm really fortunate with Bumble that they're so focused on mindfulness. I mean, we implemented a snooze feature where you can put the app on snooze and just say, I'm taking a holiday or I'm doing a digital detox. So we're always encouraged to recognize, you know, those moments and take a break or slow down.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think anxiety, stress is something that's always been a big part of my life. But I guess I hope if anyone else experiences that, I'm proof that
you can still have a great life
and a high pressure job and just work out ways to manage that.
I think that's one of the reasons why I've always been quite private. I'm very, very open with what food I'm eating, and like I post a lot of things, but I was always very, very private about those kind of things. And then I made a decision maybe 2 years ago to just talk about it. And I was like, is this like an overshare? Is this something that I want to keep to myself? Yeah. Is it going to affect the business? But then I was like, I need people to know that it's not an either or. It's not, oh, I'm anxious, I can't do a big crazy job. I can't have responsibility. I can't do big things. It's like, well, you can. You find your way. You find your balance. And I'd probably be more anxious if I wasn't doing something like this, because you need to channel your energy somewhere.
I'm exactly the same. I wouldn't know what to do if I
did anything less.
That would be worse. I'd be in hospital.
I think so too. It's like activity is kind of a way to keep it at bay, but if you just talk about it, it can reassure so many people that they don't have to sacrifice achievement for the sake of their anxiety. It doesn't have to control their life. So what do you do to kind of keep it at bay while you are going through such a busy lifestyle?
So I've set a couple of boundaries this year. I don't think I really had boundaries last year or the year before. I was just on a roll and I felt like I could do it. And then I look back on the year and I actually couldn't remember anything. I couldn't remember being in New York. I could not remember the launch of Bumble Beers and what we did. And I just realized I was probably skimming on the surface at a lot of these things because I was so focused on all the other things kind of going on in my life, or my brain had moved on to the next event or something like that. So this year I actually have one of my New Year's resolutions was to meditate every day. I've never meditated before. And as an anxious, highly critical perfectionist, I've just always thought, nah, that's not for me. Mindfulness is not a thing that I'm ever going to have or a state I'm ever going to be in. So I'm just going to push that to the side. But I have been doing it, and I wanted to do it as a personal challenge to see if meditating every day, how I would feel. And honestly, it's made a difference. Like, I only do 5 to 10 minutes and I'm so competitive that I want to keep my run streak up. I just do it on Headspace. And so I don't want to lose that streak. Because it counts how many days in a row you've done. And that is working. That's honestly working because it helps me switch my brain off. I just do it before I'm going to sleep. You're already in bed. What's 5 more minutes? And also with all the travel and things like that I do, I set a boundary that I just want to be back for the weekend. So I don't mind if that means I'm taking a really quick trip, even if it's overseas. I just have to be back for the weekend so that I get that time to wind down and I can set myself up for the week again.
And regroup before you go back to a week. That's such a good one.
It helps. It actually really helps.
Yeah, I'm actually like that, where I used to think, oh, but then I'm going to have to be in and out.
And now I'm like, just be in and out.
Just be in and out. Just get home, because the minute you get home is when you start and the more you delay the start of the unwind, like the longer it takes you to get over it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I meditate as well and I was the same as you. I used to think there's absolutely no way. And I also used to think that it meant empty your brain.
Yeah.
And I will always be like, well, my brain's never going to be empty. But now I'm just like, it's not about emptying it because that will never happen. It's just about not putting any more in there.
Mm.
No new stimulation. Just let it fester. You know, you need to let your body catch up with your mind.
Yeah.
You need to let time catch up with itself and you can't really remember anything or let anything settle if you're not just letting it catch up. And 5 minutes is enough to make a big difference.
I will never be a half an hour, I don't think.
I went through we'll a phase see. Of 20 minutes twice a day.
Did you?
Because, Whoa. And it's so funny you said about the streak thing because I feel like half of life and achieving anything is just tricking your brain, knowing what your brain needs and then tricking it into doing the things that you want it to do. And competitiveness is another thing, particularly with myself. So I was like, if I go and learn this particular technique, which is 20 minutes twice a day, I will have spent X amount of money. I need to make that worth it. But also you have to keep track of like when you do it. And I'm like, I don't want to have to write down that I didn't do it that day.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Because then
I've let myself down.
And then my diary looks shit. Like it's not even. So, you know, like whatever you need to do.
I love that.
What about self-doubt? That's another really big thing I talk about. You know, we looked at that quote before, doubt kills more dreams than failure ever will. And I think particularly when you're coming into an industry that you haven't lived in or, you know, been qualified for, it's huge.
I had such huge self-doubt in that period of quitting my job and then starting it all up again. I remember having a conversation with my mum and I just said, you know, what have I done? I can't do this. I don't know how to do this. And definitely started to question everything. And I made a few decisions back there. And if I'd gone with my gut, it actually all would have been far better than how it was. Like nothing major, but I just wish I'd trusted myself and, you know, don't let your mind kind of pull you into that space.
Mm.
I remember a teacher once saying to me, go with your initial response unless you read the question wrong. And I always think about that. So I try not to look back on decisions that I've made. I just always go with my initial thought. And when I try to change my mind, I literally say to myself, but did you misunderstand that? And if I didn't misunderstand that, then I don't change what my initial response was.
That's such a good one.
I don't know if that's right, but it seems to work. So, yeah, I think self-doubt is huge. And I think that's something that a lot of people will deal with. But I do think it is a lot of mind games. Like just go with your initial reaction. Your gut feeling's always right. You know, if something feels right, it generally is. If something feels wrong, it generally is wrong.
Mm. And none of this like revisiting that all the time and doubting your own, just go with it.
Yeah.
What's the worst that could happen?
Yeah. And also I felt like the only thing I have to lose here is my own pride.
Yeah, which is not a bad scenario.
Yeah,
in reality.
Yeah, like I'd taken a bit of a chance. I was presented with this amazing opportunity. I knew this would never ever happen to me again.
Mm.
So run with it. Like better to try and fail than not try at all.
Totally, such a good quote. I love that one.
There's my quote.
Tick. And what about, you know, going from corporate where you can be quite anonymous, like in the world generally, to what's very public and media focused and, you know, your personal profile, you become quite sought after as a person as well as through the business. Do you find that that creates a lot of pressure for you to like always have the right outfits when you're out or always say the right things or always, you know, be connected? Like, do you find that a bit of a drainer or does it stress you out? Does it fuel the anxiety?
At first I was so scared doing public appearances, even speaking on panels and doing press. But again, it was like that was a split second of my time and then there's no time to feel that fear anymore. Like you put on a brave face, you know you can do it. I've always felt honestly so supported by my manager Louise is amazing. We've got an amazing PR lead over in the US and even Whitney, when I ever get into those states where I am not sure if I can do anything, I will just text one of them. It doesn't matter what time. I can generally find someone in the US or the UK who is awake and just tell them I'm freaking out about this panel I'm about to go on. Here's one question that I'm not sure about. And they'll always come back to me and tell me that I'm going to kill it and that I'm so good at this and that you've got this. And just hearing those kind of things always puts my mind at ease because I guess being the country lead over here, I don't really have anyone to turn to in the country. Mm. So I have always maintained quite strong relationships with my manager in the UK is definitely a huge one, just to remind you of who you are and what you're good at and what you're capable of. And I think that makes a huge help, just making sure that you've got a really great support system around you. And one thing that I've always felt at Bumble that I was definitely searching for was particularly women, but just working with people who genuinely want you to succeed and believe in you. Mm. I don't think it should ever be taken for granted when you find people like that, because I've definitely had jobs in my life where I haven't felt like the person above you really wants to see you succeed. Maybe you are a bit of a threat, who knows? And I think that's one thing that I cherish with my time at Bumble and that I'm so, so grateful for, and that definitely helps flatten a lot of the self-doubt. yeah.
And what about in terms of like your image? Do you feel the need to be...
Oh, look at me.
You know, you're very trend eye right now.
I'm in gym here.
But that's fashion in itself, babe.
Honestly, when I go to the Bumble events, for sure, I need to be professional, I need to present myself well. But in my day-to-day life, I grew up on the beach playing sport.
Barefoot.
barefoot is my favorite thing. Yeah. I hate washing my hair. I don't like taking showers. It slows me down. Yeah. It is a waste of time.
I'm with you. I've never told anyone that, but I'm like, fuck, I don't have time.
I hate it. If I can get out the door without taking a shower, I'll do it. As long as I don't have an important meeting. Honestly, I try not to let that stuff get to me. I feel like my profile, and I feel weird even saying that, but my profile at the moment is to, I want to empower women. I want to make women feel good about themselves. Mm. And I'm honestly not too caught up in my own image. It's more about what I say and what I stand for that I want to be recognized for, and that I hope that's what any of the few people who do follow me, I hope it's because they believe in, you know, what we're trying to do at Bumble and the change that we're trying to create in the world.
Yeah. And in between all of that, of course, burnout, I can imagine, would be a big natea.
Yeah, very.
Since we're mirror images of each other and I'm just like, she sounds like she's inside my brain. You know, the whole like anxiety but don't want to stop, and kind of like you punish yourself in a way.
Yeah.
Like, you know what's bad for you but you just do it anyway because it's good for the other side of your brain, which is like, I love this. I love creating. I love working.
Yeah.
So, and all the travel, like how do you rest?
Yeah, I am honestly kinder to myself when I travel. I think because I know that's going to put a bit of pressure on me and I don't want to burn out. So I don't eat healthily in day-to-day life. Like, I'm a Macca's girl. I love burgers, but I do exercise.
Yeah.
But when I travel, I try to eat really healthy. I'm straight onto vitamins. I try to sleep. I try to get into the time zone I'm going into as soon as I land. And I always try to go to the gym because I try to create that routine as soon as I land.
Yeah.
And I feel like that really helps. But I also think that's why I kind of put this weekend rule in, just because I don't want to burn out. And I think it's really important to go for a walk and listen to a podcast, read a book, catch up with friends, even if it's only for half an hour. I feel better if I've given a friend a call and just spoken about something completely different.
Yeah.
And just balancing it up with, friends, family, getting outdoors.
What about sleep?
What's that?
No. I don't know. I just heard it's something that people do.
Sleep, honestly, I do think I'm pretty good. Like, I would never be it would be rare for me to be under 5 hours.
Yeah. I was like, what number is she going to say?
Two? No. It would be rare for me to get under 5.
Yeah.
8 hours is amazing for me. But if I'm doing my weekend rules, I know I can always catch up on sleep on the weekend and have like a 10-hour
session. Okay, catch up. Yep.
Yeah. So I am pretty good at that. And I think that's another great thing with Bumble and being conscious of everyone's time zones.
Mm.
It's okay if you get an email at 10 p.m., you don't need to reply to it. You know, everyone knows you're in a completely different time zone and everyone's really understanding of that.
Yeah. And so you mentioned before the things that, you know, hanging out with friends, having a call. So that brings us to our last segment, which is called Playtia. And I think we do all define each other so much based on what we do, who we work for, what kind of work we do. It's like here's my name, this is what I do, or you never really ask who you are, or what do you like, or what are your hobbies, and you might eventually get there, but I feel like we get really wrapped up in our professional identities. So I love to ask people, you know, what they do for fun. Where does your brain wander when you're not thinking about work, if there's any time when you're not thinking about work?
I honestly don't think about work when I'm cooking because I am not a good cook.
Okay.
And I only started getting into it about a year ago, actually, and realized that I loved it. I thought I was anti-cooking, but I find it very therapeutic. It's a great way for me to switch my mind off. I've got to focus on the recipe,
yeah,
and I love eating whatever I've cooked at the end. Yeah. So,
such a bonus.
Yeah.
Such a rewarding activity.
It is. So cooking is a huge one for me when I want to switch off.
Yeah.
I try to do that as much as I can. Podcasts, books, my dog, yeah. Leia, she's so cute.
Yeah, she's beautiful. I love it.
So just getting outside with her, taking her for a walk. I feel like when you get a dog, it gives you another purpose.
Totally. And it's like having a child.
Yeah. I just love her. So just spending time with her, that sounds so
quality time.
So weird. But yeah.
Not at all. Not to other dog owners. Like, yeah. Not at all. They're such a good mental health pill. You have to walk them. You can play for hours. They're just so happy,
yeah,
all the time.
Yeah.
Just reminds you to be more simple.
I know. It's such like a simple thing, and I honestly get such joy from it.
Yeah.
But yeah. I mean, I always... Manly's my place. It's where I grew up. Yeah. I love being there and just...
Are you a surfer?
No.
Really?
I'm actually terrified of waves.
Ooh,
okay. I have an actual fear. I think something happened when I was like, when I was doing nippers. Can't get out the back. Terrifies me.
Oh my god!
Really good at floating in the shallows.
Right. Okay.
And tanning.
Yeah. Good. Tanning's good.
Yeah.
Toes in the water.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, do you watch TV?
I'm huge on. Yeah, I've got a few Netflix shows that I binge.
Spill.
The Bold Type. Have you seen it?
Yep.
And,
great.
Younger. Have you watched that one?
No.
Okay, everyone's got to watch Younger. It's one with Hilary Duff.
I feel like I've watched everything. Oh.
It's about a 42-year-old woman who can't get back into publishing. She took time off to raise a child and everyone's telling her she's too old, but she looks really young, so she pretends to be 26, and Hilary Duff's her best friend in the show.
Oh.
And she gets a job at this publishing agency. It's really cool.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm like a big crime person.
Oh, I love I love crime too.
Yeah.
But dark crime. Yeah, like how
same.
I survived.
Same. Like, the more fucked up, the better.
Yeah.
Like, when I get interviewed for wellness things, people are like, I don't have a TV in my room. We just don't own a TV. And I'm like, well, I binge on like hardcore murderers.
Yeah,
I just don't know what to tell you.
Even just the Case File podcast.
Oh
my God.
Me too. It's crazy.
Yeah, they're
but
great.
I figured like I just got over myself a couple of years ago. I was like, I like it. I'm just going to stop pretending that I don't. Like,
oh, I love them.
Yeah.
Yeah. But in not like a...
No, not like a,
in
I
in a non-morbid way. Yeah. Like, in like a, this is very interesting.
Yeah, yeah, more like a fascination kind of way. And so what about dating for yourself?
Oh.
You have a Melbourne boy who's actually a Manly boy,
yeah,
who you met when you were doing nippers, or you did nippers together when you were younger,
yeah,
and then re-met like years later.
Yes,
did you meet on Bumble?
No, we didn't meet on Bumble.
Such a shame.
But if, well, because I met him before Bumble.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's okay then.
Yeah. So, yeah, I've got a boyfriend, so no dating for me. But, I mean, if I was single, absolutely I would be on Bumble. Why? There's no other platform I'd be on.
Yeah, of course. Me too.
Yeah. No, we've got I'm in a long-distance relationship, so a lot of travel back and forth. But I think the best thing is Bill, my boyfriend, does a lot of travel himself. Mm-hmm. So very clear expectations. We're both used to one another's schedules and it just works. So lucky in that sense.
Yeah. What's your ideal date night?
Honestly, it would just be getting takeaway and watching a movie at home.
Yeah,
boring.
We're the same.
Just to be a bit of a slob and feel comfortable being a slob around someone. Isn't that love?
That's what love is.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
We're
getting married in October and I'm literally like, can we just go home the night after and just watch TV? Like, when can I take the dress off?
Oh, that's so exciting.
Yeah, really exciting. But also, like, I have to get out of gym clothes. Like, what? Like, what is that?
Yeah.
All right. Second last question is the three things about you that don't normally come up in conversations.
Oh, wow. Okay. This is a pretty gross one. When I was 10, my big toe got crushed under a car seat. My dad put the car seat down on my big toe and it shattered the growth plate. My big toe never grew since. So I have this tiny little big toe.
Oh my gosh.
Tiny little big toe.
Wow.
Yeah. I would show you, but you'll be like,
oh my God, show me later. I love that. You know I love crime. That gory stuff is amazing.
It's just, I was honestly so self-conscious of it, growing up, because it was just this toe. Now everyone will want to see the toe, but it's...
I know, now you've said it.
All my friends will be laughing at
this. Will be like, so, there it is. Toe? Yeah. Does it have a name?
You know what? The second toe has a name. My sisters, every boyfriend I'd bring home, my sisters would be like, does he know about 5 Mile? We call the second toe 5 Mile.
What?
Because it looks so long compared to the other one.
That's so good.
Oh, God.
That's amazing. Okay, well, that's two things, 5 Mile, big toe. What's the third one?
I'm allergic to codeine, so I can't take painkillers.
Oh,
yeah,
that's rough.
I also react to anesthetic as well, like an agitated waker.
I'll attack. That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, there's that energy. Yeah. You put me in sleep for 3 hours, so I'm out.
And since I love motivational quotes so much, what is your favorite quote?
Oh, I mean, I do like the one that I said earlier about better to try and fail than not have tried at all.
Yeah.
You know what? I read a weird one the other day from Steve Jobs, and I have never really had a healthy diet. Mm-hmm. And he said, treat food like your medicine, otherwise medicine becomes your food. And that's really stuck with me because I need to make a change in that aspect. Not so motivational, but just to keep you thinking about yourself.
Yeah, it definitely makes you have a think about what you're putting in your body. Because I think we forget. I mean, I know logically, of course, what you're eating is going in your body, but I think we forget that actually is our fuel. If you just treat yourself as a car, if you put shitty fuel in your car, it's not going to perform. But I don't think we make that connection often enough.
And I mean, it's scary to think in that quote, you know, otherwise medicine becomes your food. I think that's just the harsh reality of it, but you don't often get to thinking that far down the track.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. We're very now. Yeah. I mean, we don't have time.
Yeah.
We don't have time for showers,
and we're
babe,
that YOLO generation, you know?
We are. Yeah.
Which doesn't help.
No. Well, thank you so much. This was amazing. It was so great to have you. Congratulations on everything that you're doing.
Thanks so much. I've loved it.
Oh, good. Can't wait to see what's coming next.
Thanks. You will have to look out on my Instagram.
I know. Your profile.
Yeah.
I'm sure you can all hear how much fun I had recording this one. What an absolute legend. I'm so inspired by her confidence and openness about the big toe and her anxiety, and I'm sure many of you listening also share my admiration of Michelle and her story. Make sure you give her a follow at Michelle Battersby, which I'll link to in the show notes, of course, along with Bumble's page and website. If you liked what you heard, please do screenshot the episode. Do it now as you're listening and tag us both so we can see what you think. And if you get a moment to leave a proper review on the podcast app, I would be endlessly grateful. And thank you to those who have already voted in the Australian Podcast Awards. CCA is still in the top 10 and there's a few weeks to go to keep us there, so keep those votes coming. I'll include links as to how you can vote for that in the show notes as well. If you're interested in starting your own podcast, I've also written up a blog post on the equipment that I use, as a couple of you have asked, so it's now live at spoonfulofsarah.com. Hope you're having an amazing week and seizing your yay.